Hey guys, welcome to Cinepile, a podcast that actually cares about movies that matter. Today we are going to be doing things a little bit differently with this episode. We're not going to be doing our typical recommendations at the beginning of the episode. We might put some information at the bottom, but we are going to be doing an auteur kind of episode here, and we're going to be specifically talking about Denis Villeneuve. That's the director who most recently put out Arrival. He's also known for Sicarios and Prisoners, and we're going to be discussing just what makes him a director and what's making him such a complete powerhouse that we're now seeing in Hollywood. If you get excited for that, we're going to discuss some themes and motifs and just overall his past films as well as his new films.
This is Kyle Montgomery here, guys. The big topic for today will be Arrival. Mm-hmm. But we want to kind of touch on some of his earlier movies because they're all fantastic.
To one level or another. All his films are good.
Yeah. I think he's definitely excelling right now at the thriller. But now he's delving into science fiction, mm-hmm. which for the future, we've got Blade Runner coming up. He's going to be the one doing Blade Runner with Roger Deakins and Ryan Gosling, which is going to be huge.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Do you think he'll get slated at all for any of the future Star Wars as well if he kind of keeps showing?
No, he's going to stay away from that. In my opinion,
and because I know him. Hollywood science fiction.
Yeah, I know him personally, and I'm going to tell you.
Denis and I were talking on the phone, and he was just telling me how he's not about that.
So here are some of his earlier films. We haven't seen his earliest films.
Right.
But the earliest one we've seen is Polytechnique, which kind of, from my understanding, put him in the international spotlight. Polytechnique, Incendies, Enemy, Prisoners, Sicario, and Arrival, the most recent film.
Mm-hmm. It's a hell of a lineup.
Yeah, it really is. Absolutely fantastic. Every film has something for you. We are going to, just as a disclaimer, we're going to openly talk about Arrival, Sicario, and Prisoners.
So, spoilers.
Yeah, hopefully you've seen those. They're all readily available. They're pretty recent. But we're going to definitely leave Incendies and Enemy, I think, unspoiled. We really hope that... I think Incendies is just almost flawless. It's a beautiful, powerful film that I don't want to ruin for anybody.
Which I don't remember if that actually won Best Foreign Film or it was nominated. I think maybe it was just nominated.
It should have won. I don't even know who it was running against. I have no idea. But I'm telling you right now.
Look that up.
Yeah, it should have won. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so where do we want to start off as far as just talking? Do we want to start early with Polytechnique or just start off with Arrival, his new Hollywood blockbuster that's just come out now?
Well, I'd like to say something about the opening of his movies.
Go for it. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's appropriate because we're opening the discussion.
Excellent.
And it's so fantastic from a cinematography standpoint, just a storytelling standpoint, the way that he reveals information with his opening shot. You always start with some shot in Prisoners, it's the forest with the deer. Sicario, it's like this Arizona suburb. And then you reveal information,
right? Mm-hmm.
You have the soldiers, like the SWAT team, enter frame, or you track back and you reveal that a father and his son are hunting. It's like this, right. I don't know, it's always like a kind of like one step at a time into the pool.
Yeah, it strikes me as like it's almost like a tableau that slowly becomes animated to where, you know, it's like a tableau that starts to speak more and more and everything like that, which was kind of, I felt like Tom Ford's film with Nocturnal Animals was kind of the same way, but that's a total off subject kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like it where it does pull out and it gives you more and more and more. And I think it really definitely gives that credence and a little bit of a tip of the hat to that film is a visual medium and communicating through images and communicating through characters and placement and movement of camera are what will forever tell the story best, not necessarily the dialogue and like leaning heavily on that. That if something can be understood without words, it's doing exactly what a movie should do best.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, and so Incendies probably has the best
opening. Oh my gosh.
of his openings that we're talking about. Where
it's on YouTube. Feel free to go watch that opening scene for Incendies.
Give me a minor refresher. I don't remember the opening of Incendies so well.
It's kind of this. It looks like a desert
right now, but
yeah. Well, I know it, so I can see it in my mind right now. It's this desert canyon with something like, it's not a palm tree, but it's got this tree in the foreground. So it's a bit of like a tight landscape shot, and you start pulling back to reveal a window frame, a frame within a frame. You start panning to the left, and all of a sudden you're in a room with child soldiers, and that the music starts picking up, and you're dropped into this.
Which it's a Radiohead. What song is it? It's like
It's You and Whose Army from Radiohead.
Right.
And that's a pretty common theme with him, is the fact that he really likes to use Radiohead in several of his movies.
It happens at the end of Prisoners.
Yeah, and didn't he have one from In Rainbows and Arrival?
I do remember another film having a Radiohead moment. I can't remember if it was Arrival, though. I hope so.
Mm.
I love it. Mm, I love Radiohead, and so I want to hear more.
So let's talk about a little bit of this kind of where everything has now kind of come to a point for him. So with Arrival, what is it that is making Arrival so good? Because right now it's made over $100 million in the box offices with only $47 million budget. So it's made bank, and I definitely thought when I first saw it, it wasn't going to be as receptive to people in terms of sci-fi and everything like that. Because this is the time for big blockbusters, loud explosions, you know, a lot of movement. Yeah. And this is something that it has a certain tepidness to it, but it's like a very intelligently crafted film, and it seems to resonate really well.
Right.
So why do you think it's resonating so well with so many people?
Well, I think it's just because it's good. I mean, so it's not like the normal sci-fi film. I feel like there's not a lot of action. There's a lot of special effects, but it's not, the movie isn't predicated on special effects. You know, it's not a typical blockbuster. It's a very cerebral kind of thought-provoking film.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if it's doing really well because of word of mouth. It could just be the marketing of it that people are seeing and really like it. And obviously, like Amy Adams.
Yeah, Amy Adams is the big selling point. It seems like she's all over on all the posters and everything like that. Not so much Hawkeye.
But regardless of why it's doing well, it deserves to do well.
Yeah, and we've seen some great reviews for it. I don't know if I can say it's actually resounding that people are enjoying it. You know what I mean? I haven't talked to anybody else, like my family or anybody who's not a cinephile going to see it.
Mm-hmm.
We love it and we can appreciate it, and we love hard sci-fi, and we love science fiction and fantasy too. Sci-fi. But yeah, this is definitely hard sci-fi, which sets it apart, I think. But hey, maybe that's in. Yeah. You know, Interstellar did exceptionally well. I would call that hard sci-fi, even though it got into this kind of metaphysical love realm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it plays with time in a very good and fun kind of way. But where do you feel as though, what makes this really a Denis kind of film compared to anything else, Kyle? Like as far as like cinematography, like what have you noticed?
No, I mean, it does have the kind of reveal opening shot. I don't think he and the cinematographer have worked together yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredibly dark. I read a little bit of trivia that it was very much inspired by Martina Hugladinova.
Nailed it.
Hugland Ivanov. I've got the name right here. Her work is really interesting. She's a photographer.
Okay.
Which, here's a little something as well.
What did she photograph?
He and Deakins looked to a photographer for inspiration for the color palette for Sicario as well, a person who had photographed the border conflicts.
Hmm.
But I don't know. I think the intimacy sets it apart from other films. I think that's what makes it Denis' film, in my opinion.
Who was the cinematographer of this?
We'll pull it up right now.
Yeah, and then kind of in the meantime, something that I was wanting to kind of bring to light is that, I mean, it sounds kind of typical. It's what I did in the previous episode, just kind of like the house cleaning episode when everyone moves out and enjoying Thanksgiving and everything like that, to where he seems to be really good at creating very tight, intimate character relationships and how they're operating within a system. And you can kind of feel this revolving world around them and how they're trying to become like independent within it. And it's kind of like this constraint pinball kind of action inside the film of them trying to get around and trying to make sense of everything, towards like Incendies, where she's trying to deal with the war and everything around that. And like, there's this big environment that's around her, but at the same time, it'll come down into this, like this very small kind of aspect on how that's working around her. And same thing towards like the big government and all like the constraints of the big government. And
in Arrival.
Yeah. In Arrival. And like how they're trying to wiggle within the system. So it always seems like it's a very outward, kind of influential systems that are happening on the characters, which is kind of common, but it seems like his treatment of it seems very unique.
Well, it might be unique in terms of blockbusters because his emphasis stays on people. instead of
intimate.
Even though we have all of these themes and the use of time, all of these different things going on around them, he never forgets. He and the screenwriter, they just never forget who their entry is into the story.
Right.
Which actually, I'm going to retract myself a little bit there, because one of my problems with the film was that there are a couple moments where they forget who our point of view is. There's one scene in particular where Jeremy Renner starts narrating, and that upset me. Not, obviously, I'm not going to go protest about it, but it was kind of, this is definitely...
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I completely forgot about it.
It shouldn't have been in there. She should have been narrating, or they should... Really, what's happening on screen is exactly what his character is talking about. It's, in my opinion, a failed little moment of voiceover, because it's telling us what we're seeing. That, but maybe that wasn't necessarily him.
Right.
I have no idea who made that decision, whether it was in the script, or perhaps somebody was like, maybe the audience needs to be told here instead of relying on them to figure it out.
Yeah, or it could be like a talent kind of thing towards like Jeremy Renner needed a like bigger platform. Like, hey, we need to give him a better platform to be on.
No.
Because I don't know. I don't know. I mean, you never know. Like, when it comes down to these kinds of things, like, all these actors are all represented by different agents and large companies. And, you know, when it comes down to it, there's like, hey, you know, like, there's not really, like, when it comes to the executive producers, they're like, we don't want to piss anyone off because we told them that, that this person would get, like, X amount of time within this film, and kind of feel like we've snubbed them a little bit.
Yeah, but that's all just...
That's all conspiracy tinfoil theory over there.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd buy that. Yeah.
But there was a moment there where I thought the point of view kind of broke down. But they move over it pretty quickly.
I forgot about that. Yeah, I don't think they should have done that. Because, yeah, I thought it was intimate with Amy Adams.
She was our... perspective. Right. She's our entry into the story,
and for good reason, because a lot of the movie has to do with her flashbacks and flash forwards and her living through her life non-linearly. Introducing a different perspective kind of it doesn't really harm that, but it's not consistent.
Yeah, I want that kind of consistency, especially in something that feels like it was pretty tightly woven. From what I understand, the short story is even written from her perspective. I believe it's a first-person story. I like the breakdown of that in Sicario.
It completely changes.
Indeed.
Points of view and focus, the film's focus.
It made it feel like a larger film, that it was kind of showing you different perspectives along this one issue. But for Arrival, it was so intimate, and we needed to be there with Amy Adams the whole time.
Granted, it was only for a minute, maybe. Not even a minute.
No,
right?
But it was also a montage scene.
Yeah, it was.
Which is kind of like, you're already going to do a montage. Just give me a good montage. And it was a good montage. Visually, it said everything that needed to be said.
Yeah.
I didn't need to hear.
While watching the film, people were confused in knowing how much time had passed in like that scene or something. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, we need a voiceover.
Yeah.
And maybe someone just thought, being creative of putting the perspective in someone else. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
We don't know what the creative choice was for that.
But. Personally, I could have even done without her VO that bookends the film. I really don't like bookend voiceovers. I feel like sometimes they're used as a crutch. Her voiceover does give you some good information, and it gives you perspective.
Right.
But it's not necessarily something you couldn't have gleaned from the rest of the film.
Yeah. But you almost can let that pass. At least, not that I'm saying you should let it pass, but the fact that at the end we do have the revelation that she isn't living her life, like all these moments are happening at once. The voiceover is almost like omniscient of all of her events happening at once. It almost is living outside of her life as well. Like you could almost have it as part of her experience, you know?
Indeed. Yeah. I would not argue that, that use of it could be totally justified.
One of the rare instances where voiceover is justified.
Indeed.
Now, one other thing I was wanting to talk about is kind of the aliens a little bit, because he seems to have a unique relationship to kind of the look and feel, I guess you could say, for people who haven't seen, he has another film that's called Enemy, which has a very consistent motif of spiders throughout the entire film. And even these aliens, which are kind of aptly named heptapods, I guess they have seven arms or seven triangle things on their weird foot pad.
You can't even say arms.
Yeah. Tentacles?
Appendages.
Appendages. Yeah, appendages. How about that? Yeah, appendages works.
Trunks.
But it also has this kind of yeah, this kind of tentacle, like, reaching out, creepy tendril, you know, omnipresence kind of look and feel.
Wonderful design.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Perfectly inhuman.
Mm-hmm.
With for a movie that is, you know, at its core about communication and communication breakdown, having to make an alien that, like, that doesn't even have eyes mm-hmm. or a mouth, like, it's so perfectly inhuman that's like, how do we communicate with this thing? And so they designed this, like, it was ultimately, I mean, I've heard from some people they didn't like them. They didn't like the look of the alien.
You're going to be divisive. Yeah. I'd rather they be divisive than give us little green men.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, and you know what? If you didn't like the alien, I think that means they did a good job.
Right.
Because you're not meant to like an alien. You know, it's not E.T. But
you're meant to feel a little uneasy seeing it.
Yeah.
And not necessarily in, like, that scary kind of thing, just like a...
It's foreign. It's alien.
It's foreign. It's it's absolutely foreign.
Yeah, and even when it gets into the language, I thought was... so smart, because it reminded me a lot of the I might mess up the pronunciation of it, I always screw it up, but it's like the Ouroboros, the snake that's eating itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So, like, you know, like that symbol of infinity,
yeah.
I think also, like, ties into the language of it all, and like as far as the language and like what the language represents, and it just has, like, I think that's what makes his film so good, that it just has this excellent level of throughput and artistry, that it's like everything is done with a complete and solid purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is no fluff. It's like a almost like a perfectly written sentence, to where there's no, you know, flowery anything. It's just direct and clean. I think that's what makes his character so great to listen to, because they're so honest and so direct and so just personable, I guess, realistic. Mm-hmm. And I think also
they
when
have
it comes
a philosophical
to the plot,
question to them usually.
Yeah, they always have a good philosophical question.
Some pointed question that people can fall on one side or the other. And you don't. There's no clear answer necessarily. And in this one, there was a couple. The communication is a huge motif, but the big question kind of comes to for me with time, and how. I'm trying not to spoil things too much, but
no. Let's do a little backtrack. So spoilers ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we go.
So spoilers. Yeah.
Here's kind of the crux, at least. I know this is a philosophical question that really attracts Neil.
Right.
So the aliens' language is cyclical.
Yes.
Their brains, or whatever they have, are wired in a way that time is not linear to them. And as Amy Adams actually begins to learn this language, her mind or brain becomes wired in a similar way.
Right. The language you know changes the way you think.
Yeah. And so time becomes cyclical to her. She starts living moments from her life simultaneously, which I'll get into that later as far as how much I love the editing of it.
Right.
But yeah, so that's where kind of the question of destiny
comes in. Yeah. So you get to a point where it's, can you change your own future in a way? If you can see your future and you see what's going to happen and it's bad, you could argue it's bad. Can you change it, or is that locked in?
Yeah.
And that's kind of a big question that they have in the film, and that a lot of people disagree with a choice that Amy Adams ends up making. She knows her daughter, if she has a daughter, she's going to die young and painfully.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how old she was, like 10 or something.
She's young.
She's very young. And she decides to have her daughter anyway.
Yeah.
That's the philosophical question that's divided of, did she have a choice in having her daughter?
Well, there's two moral... There's a philosophical question there, and then there's the moral one.
Yeah.
So what upsets people is that they don't think she should make that decision. They are under the impression that she has this free will,
right,
and she could decide one way or another to either have the child or to not.
Right. And I would fall on, even if it was just that question, say she did have the power to do that, I would fall on her still having her kid.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad decision. I don't know in my position if I would make the same one,
right,
but I understand it.
Right.
I don't fault her character for that. It's a tough decision. Then there's the question of, does she even have that decision?
Exactly. Yeah. Is there free? Can you have a deterministic or like a fate kind of world and have free will at the same time?
And I don't have
question.
The answer. Yeah. I don't think we're going to solve that this episode.
Yeah. Once we master that language and rewire our brains, we can answer that. But I think that's also why, you know, if we're in the spoilers, I think that's why, you know, Jeremy Renner and her are kind of split up, you know, at the end, at the future that she's seeing into the future. Because
well,
I think, exactly that, to where it's the, you get to put yourself in the same kind of places that the characters are, and like Jeremy Renner left because he I'm sure once he learned the language, if he did, that that kind of thing would happen.
Yeah, I don't think he ever did.
No,
she shares the knowledge with him. I think it's implied. She eventually
tells him.
I bet he would learn.
She's going to die.
Mm-hmm. No, because his language is one of mathematics,
science, and math.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's tied to him as a character, as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas her, what sets her apart is her
understanding.
Yeah, her understanding, her propensity for language, and being she can open her mind to this.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think it's implied that she, if not explicitly, informs him of what's going to happen.
Right. So yeah. He's on the first end of that philosophical question of what he thinks.
You don't have the child.
He thinks that she doesn't have, she does have a choice in the matter, mm-hmm. for one, and she chose the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Like, why would she not tell him before, or why would she even decide to have the kid if it was going to be so painful for them and painful for her?
Painful, yeah, for the child.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I side with Amy Adams in terms of that moment because she understands time differently. Right. I'm not going to say, I would say actually better. She understands it better and knows the value of every moment.
Right.
Because it's not something that's fleeting. It's something that she's living. She's not living it all at once. It's so hard to even wrap your mind around
It's like the whole.
It's almost impossible.
Slaughterhouse 5 thing where it's too difficult to be creative enough even to think of something like that because physically we're not wired to think that way.
But ultimately, so kind of getting into, I don't want to give the big spoilers away, like why they're there, like the aliens themselves or anything, but like the main thing that revolves around and why I think. Why the film is so kind of poignant at this time is when you have things like, the political stuff, like 2016, when you have people on the left, people on the right, mm-hmm. and this whole film, the whole film is about communication and coming together as not just even a people, but as a whole species.
Yeah.
And it's like, not just like Americans patching up like their things. It's like, no, like everybody on the entire planet needs to come together. And it kind of leads into some, getting back into the philosophical questions of, would this language also enable you to view the realities of your actions? So if you can actually see, what you would do, okay, so if I spill my milk, that means it's going to kill a kid in Africa somehow, butterfly effect kind of level. Would that affect it to where knowledge and the understanding of your consequences can stop that?
And that's... question. Do they even have the ability to change it?
Exactly.
Right. Or is that's everything interesting destined? Point
because in other sense, like other questions where it's, is there, can you actually make a choice? Because I'm getting more on the point to that there is kind of a combination of free will and like fate where you were always going to make this choice, but you have the freedom to make it and you eventually will make it because it's the choice you were going to make. Like, it's the right thing for you.
It's the choice that maybe if you... It's the choice you want to make or the choice that you're... Yeah, like you're saying you're going to. You're still going to decide this. It's the way you're wired. It's your life. It's all the nature and nurture that's been in you.
Right.
But it's also your destiny to make it.
But in your point in the situation where you're saying spilling milk that has some... something that's inconsequential that, I'll just not do that, to save someone's life. I don't know about that one now, because you're not going to choose to do that. You could easily...
Well, yeah, because my whole thing is, I think it gets into the importance as far as, just the human condition of removing yourself from yourself and realizing that you are a part of a system. And I think that's what, like that language could do, is that, if the, the Chinese guy or whatever that we see later on, that... that has the ability, somewhere in the future that he mastered the language, that it could kind of be creepy because it could be used for power.
Well, he doesn't master the language.
Oh, yeah, I guess
it seems like she's the only person at that time that...
Yeah.
Even until the end of the film, it seems like it hadn't caught on yet or something.
Mm-hmm. Which it's so intimate.
They do imply at the party where she learns the information for the phone call to call him that... the world has come together.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some sort of people understanding that there is this ability and this power.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe she isn't the only one.
Yeah,
maybe she is, and they just know she can do that, and so they're like,
mm-hmm. It's really starting to learn. Doesn't matter really if she is the only one.
Right. No, it doesn't.
But the story's intimate enough that you don't know whether somebody on the other side of the world is beginning to understand the language. The other countries are definitely helping one another at some points in the film.
Wait, it's implying the world is saved.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the whole system thing, well, that's exactly what the heptapods kind of seemed like they were. They weren't, I mean, they were quite literally faceless beings that didn't seem almost like individuals.
Right.
They were agents of making sure the future happens.
They're agents of time.
They're agents of time.
They're time cops.
They are time cops.
They're like the what is it, like the keepers of time, or like the Q, kind of like from Star Trek, or what is it, the Watchers from the DC universe, towards like the Great Watchers who kind of keep
that's
everything.
That's the heptapods.
Yeah, that's the heptapods.
Well, so we were talking earlier too. That's like the interesting scene where they have a an attack. There's like a rogue human that is listening to basically like Breitbart and all these other like
they're basically it's the equivalent of a right-wing of terrorist in a way an alt-right kind of,
and they think they're doing the wrong thing with these aliens, and that they need to be attacking them.
They need to be on the defensive.
The humans need to fight for their lives, kind of thing. And so him and a couple other
soldiers
bring a bomb into the room, and they cause an explosion, trying to basically either start a war with the aliens or kill them.
Mm-hmm.
But it ends up doing harm to one of the aliens, which is interesting because they knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, when you think about what their language is to them,
right,
and their understanding of time, even thousands of years in the future, they knew that this bomb would be there before they even came to Earth.
Right.
Right.
And they knew that this would transpire. One of them
would be killed.
Yeah. And yeah, super spoilers as far as
their
that
names
goes.
Or whatever?
Well, no, their names are Abbott and Costello. I can't remember which one bites the dust.
It's almost impossible.
I think Costello dies, because I think like Abbott's on the left and Costello's on the right, and I think Costello dies.
I don't remember.
I don't know, but it's inconsequential because they're like, they look like copies of each other.
Yeah, massive spoilers, guys. I'm sorry.
hopefully, we've gone to see it. You'll still be able to appreciate it regardless, because it is, as you can see, we're delving into the philosophy behind it, and that says something about the depth of the film.
Right, right.
But one of the aliens uses its alien powers to save Amy Adams. It's a massive blast of energy, basically, kind of like a telekinetic power.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, that's
force
what
push.
Yeah, that's yeah. what kills the alien, is this
right.
use of
sure,
power.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
As opposed to
no
the actual
the explosion
bomb
would actually damage them.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to damage anything on their side of the wall.
Yeah.
You know, it could be anything though, because we're in such this limited perspective from the human's point of view. Maybe it was just old age coincidence.
I highly doubt it too.
You know, he was in the kitchen and he slipped. Surprisingly, yeah, we got kicked in
the sandwich, fell on the knife.
Yeah, and I really did like the art direction and everything like that. Kind of getting into a little bit of this, like the spaceship and the minimalism of it all, and like that main area, how it was just like that one big giant, almost like a movie theater screen that you're looking at to have them walk up. And I remember it was so great to experience in the theater, just because of the big bass like rumblings as like the heptapods are walking up and everything. I was always like really, I thought it was such a great movie to see at the movies.
Great sound design.
Yeah, great. Yeah, for sure. Awesome sound design. Beautiful and picturesque, and I don't know, just really, really filled the void, I guess you could say, of the theater and of the frame, to where it's like, you know, sometimes it'll seem that they use a wide just to use a wide, but it seemed that it was very well thought out. But
I've got a note or two about the look.
Okay,
so in one of the interviews, Denis said he wanted the feel and the look of the film to be like this was happening on a bad Tuesday morning, like when you were a kid on the school bus on a rainy day and you dream while looking out of the window at the clouds. And so you do have this pane of glass between them and the aliens, the world of mist, their atmosphere on the other side. And you're looking
obscuring their view, like your view of them.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much you can read into in terms of,
like you don't even
it
get
being
a
screen
world
are limited, which you see the full creature eventually.
Right.
And, but that's at the point that she begins to understand them.
Yeah.
And their language. So maybe those two things are tied together, which how much we see of them is depending on the linguist's understanding of their language. What is revealed to us, just like it's revealed to her, or maybe not revealed, but as she begins to understand it, we begin to see the full picture,
mm-hmm. like, the full alien. Like the director revealing it to
yeah,
us.
Yeah, kind of the progression right. of our understanding
really,
of these
we couldn't
things.
See him before because, yeah, the wall just wasn't high enough to see how tall they were.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, narratively, yeah, they maybe choose that moment for us to see the whole thing once the reveal for Amy Adams's power, essentially, is revealed.
Yeah. So in terms of the aliens and the sound design, something that I noted that I absolutely love.
Mm-hmm.
So cliche nowadays to have the wah sound, you know, the Inception
the
bell.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
Which, kind of, what I loved about it for Inception is it's totally justified to the story. It's actually, in one way, you could view it as diegetic. Because mm-hmm. what they did is they took that Edith Piaf song and slowed it down. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're hearing are those bells. Just like he would be hearing that several levels deep in the dream.
Mm-hmm.
For this film, that is the actual sound of their language.
Right.
That the aliens are making.
Which is even more foreign, right?
It's yeah.
even more impossible to communicate with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how do you...
There's no way we can make... or really decipher those sounds in a way that we're used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know what? Now thinking about it, they must have a telekinetic capability to manipulate their ink that they use to write their language. So
well, we know they do because he force pushed it.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. Like,
and, so yeah, they definitely have some sort of ability.
Yeah, some kind of telekinetic thing. I mean, they're probably one big giant brain squid monster.
There's something.
Love
day
creature.
There's a hive mind.
Well, and then also kind of taking some step backs, where do we see, you know, any other of Denis, like other kind of films, like where do we see these kind of philosophical questions that get brought up? What were some of the things like Prisoners I know we talked about as far as what would we do in terms of pursuing our own brand of justice?
His films always have something going on.
Right.
I think they usually have a moral external quandary. And then something almost subconscious, something that a theme or a philosophical line that runs through the whole film. It's not necessarily something that the characters are aware of.
Right.
Like the father in Prisoner, obviously he's aware of his external conflict, the idea of using violence mm-hmm. to get his daughters.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, for the viewer, it goes a step deeper to where it's this... idea of what is justice or
do
how
we
far
we agree with what he's doing.
Yeah, do yeah, we agree can. With what he's doing? Is this justifiable ethically? It becomes like, yeah, a moral ethical drama.
And yeah, it's just that it's that point that people will just fall on either side. There's mm-hmm. no easy answers to like the questions that some of his films bring up.
Right. And it's beautiful because then you see the other characters falling on those sides.
Yeah.
And you start to side with different people.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
I think you understand them all.
Oh, yeah. This, oh, yeah. It's a.
Like, I totally get where Jeremy Renner's coming from.
Right.
In where Arrival.
Like, yeah. And he leaves her and he's upset. And
I get
naturally.
It.
Naturally.
I understand it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's got that. Incendies. I just. It's so wonderful. I don't want to.
Yeah. Let's not.
We can talk about Enemy then.
Well, Enemy's
well,
kind
was,
of the outlier
the,
of
yeah,
his films.
Yeah.
I would say, like, of all of his films, like, that's the headiest or most cerebral of all of his films to where, like, you're
the
sitting
most
there,
inscrutable.
Yeah, to where, I mean, you're dealing with, you know, is this imaginary? Is this real? Does Jake Gyllenhaal have a twin?
Right.
What's going on? Why are we seeing random cuts of, like, spiders, you know, crawling above giant cities?
It's not easy to approach.
Oh, not, no. Yeah. But, it's definitely, like, one of those kind of, like, second viewings. But it creates conversation, which is always good. Right?
No, it's great for people like us and hopefully some of our listeners, you know, who don't mind going into a film and not understanding it the first time around.
Yeah.
Or not even understanding it but realize that the things that are happening are not literal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, they're representations of ideas, they're symbols. But he brings some of that art house sentiment to his films like Arrival. It's not a traditional science fiction film. It's heavy on the symbolism, philosophical questions, all of these things. But kind of like Nocturnal Animals, maybe this is a bit of a gateway drug for somebody.
Right.
Mm.
Maybe they like it enough to delve into something that's more art house like Enemy.
Yeah, it's art house light.
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Just where it's like if you're going to kind of introduce someone who's kind of used to that mass kind of thing. Like I think Nocturnal Animals is actually great for that too, as well as.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. But even with kind
it's
of getting
Settlers
into...
of Catan for board games. That's how I was describing it.
We should do that. Cinepile plays Settlers of Catan. Yeah, and with like even with Sicario, kind of Kyle talking about how people falling on the left or right of you know how characters are pursuing in goals to where
the decisions
know,
they
yeah,
make.
Yeah, Benicio del Toro, Emily Blunt as well, and just kind of like the decisions that they make, and you know it leads you with going like, is this okay? And I don't know, I think he's great because all of his movies, you know, have always, I mean at least with us, I mean because we're all pretty similar in what we like, but it always seems to generate a dialogue with the moviegoer. Which is what I
an
think
internal
is
internal dialogue.
Yeah,
know, something you can discuss, but also just like you have to wrestle with. It's something that's difficult to grapple.
Yeah, you watch narrative and create a narrative within yourself, and I think that's what makes it so engaging. Because I mean, I don't know, you really get to melt into the screen, and I mean, because you know, I think a lot of people have that. I love it. I was going to with my niece. We went to go see like Pete's the Magic Dragon. It's like the new version of it. And I envied
Peace
her.
Dragon.
I Pete, whatever. Peace Dragon. And I remember I envied her like so much because I looked at her and I could just see like her just staring at the movie theater and well, at the screen and just like her eyes just darting like all around. And I was like, oh my God, we're giving her ADD right now. But no, like
she's lost.
Yeah, yeah, she's just lost she's and just in like a world. Yeah, she's in a world and like the what is it, like the apparatus theory and the fact that, you know, as far as like, you know, falling into it to where she had completely fallen into it. And you know, you so rarely get to have that opportunity as an adult because you can think about it. Mm-hmm. And
for me, Prisoners.
Prisoners was
probably
gravitating. Just.
Yeah, I just fell into that movie in the theaters. I highly recommend nobody ever watch Denis' trailers before the films because they're often marketed
on mass.
Towards this mass audience.
They have to make it to get money, so they're deceptive in a way.
Mm-hmm. For Sicario, it totally spoiled plot points for me. I enjoyed the film less having seen the trailer, which is a shame.
Honestly, just not watch many trailers in general.
But definitely for these guys.
That's just my policy in general.
That'd be a great YouTube channel, like trailers that don't give away too much.
Well, everything should be a teaser trailer.
Yeah, everything should be a teaser, instead of just being
just to let you know that this exists.
Yeah, these are some of the visuals.
This is who's doing it. Mm-hmm. Here's the director and the cinematographer and producer.
There you go. That's all you need to know, either you're interested or not.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, Prisoners was this epic. I keep comparing it to Russian novels, where something like Sicario is like a super small Cormac McCarthy border crime, like blood drama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Prisoners is the Russian novel that's huge, sprawling. It's got numerous characters.
It's
each
a
of
dance,
them.
Like on a floor. It's just like there's all these little stories, and they're all bucketed and like orbiting around one another. And then once in a while, they'll just bump into each other and keep on dancing. It's just this great thing. But
it's beautiful, and I just fell into it.
And just because a little bit, so we're kind of coming to a close with the episode. As far as questions, if you were gonna say of any of Denis' films to watch first and you're going to recommend it to him, starting with Kyle, ending on me, that which one would it be and why? And what's your favorite color?
For me, I just love Prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
I think Incendies is probably the better movie in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to jump into his world, I would watch Prisoners as like the gateway. Watch Prisoners. If you see something you like there, if you enjoy that movie, then jump to Incendies. It's... Yeah, let me gather my thoughts.
That's a really tough one.
It's a tough one to watch, and I think you need to understand that you're dealing with somebody who is not just this obscure foreign filmmaker, which you might get that impression from the first little bit of Incendies. You might think you're in for something like a slow or tedious foreign film.
Mm-hmm.
When really he makes thrilling films.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why I get drawn into it so much. I can have this dialogue after I see the films, but while I'm watching it, on a surface level, the story is just engaging. And I'm wondering, in not necessarily a Game of Thrones kind of way, but I'm wondering what's going to happen next. who's safe, who's not, where is this story going?
So if it was a first movie for someone, then would you land for, with Incendies or with Prisoners? Then?
Prisoners, like Prisoners. I said, yeah. Okay. That would be the gateway.
Okay.
Fantastic film.
It's more accessible.
It's way more accessible for... Mm-hmm.
Not that... I'm not. Incendies isn't...
Incendies is dark.
It's yeah.
It's
yeah.
super dark. It deals with a lot of really serious things, which Prisoners does, but in this PG... I don't know if it was PG-13 or R, but that kind of like... I don't know. A bit more of an American way. Mm-hmm. Whereas Incendies... Like, that's...
It's a foreign film on top of it.
Yeah, and it's
in a different language.
It's something of a war film in a way. It's...
Yeah.
It's brilliant, masterful filmmaking. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would jump into Prisoners first.
Okay. What about you, Neil, over there? What would you recommend?
I'd jump into Incendies.
Jump in.
Okay. Jump
only,
right in.
Only because that's my favorite film of his. I think that's his best film. When we're talking about movies that have... like a pointed question.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of them.
Yeah.
There's philosophical issues.
Moral philosophical questions.
In that film that are very captivating.
And you can watch them either by yourself or with friends. I think that's what's also really good about his films.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, because like how we said, you know, internal and external dialogues that you can create with his movies, but.
Yeah, I don't think I could watch his as easily with friends.
Ouch.
If I'd have seen Prisoners at home in a living room and somebody had been talking, I would have had to tell them to shut the fuck up.
Well, you can see them in a movie theater.
I'm not
going to.
No talking during these movies for me.
I hate those people who talk during
Cooper.
Movie theaters. Sorry, I'm kind of. That is one of mine. So, and I'd guess the one that I actually just watched it today, and this would actually be my recommendation would be a Polytechnique, which is a one of his earlier films that I actually just watched 50 minutes ago or so, but
you watched it while we were recording.
But
that's interesting that you choose kind of his first like big film.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle, you chose his maybe most accessible American, but arguably one of his best films.
Yeah,
if not the best, you could argue it's his best.
You could definitely make that argument.
And then I'm choosing the one I think is just the best. So we each have three different kind of strategies here.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, although I think Incendies might be the better film.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think Prisoners is something I'm more likely to continuously watch, like once a year.
That's true.
I'd probably agree with that.
We should watch Prisoners, open the windows in here, get it nice and chilly, because it like revolves around Christmas time and everything like that. But no, you know, kind of expanding a little bit more with Polytechnic, like why I like it more is more so because you guys know me, I'm a bad dual screener. Like, you know, like if we're watching movies here and stuff like that, like you'll see me. I'm browsing Facebook every once in a while. I'm looking at my, and I'm texting. That is a bad thing that I do. And
you recognize that?
Yes.
You're going to begin to deal
step.
With that.
Yes, this is the first step. Hi, my name's Cooper. I'm a double screener. I've been double screener all my life, and I'm here for some fucking help, guys. But
hi, Cooper.
But when it came to Polytechnic, because of the way that it's shot, and there's so many long shots, heavy steady cam shots and everything like that, I couldn't look away. And I was even watching it on a computer screen, too. And, you know, usually the smaller and smaller the real estate of the screen, the less and less time you give to it, that, I don't know, I found myself, I only texted once.
It was shot incredibly well.
Yeah, no, shot so well.
It was that Steadicam, just very kinetic,
yeah.
Super fluid. Mm-hmm. Everything seemed to have, like, a motive as well with the moves.
Yes, everything, there was no fluff to it. Like, right. Like I was saying, like, it's very direct, very clean. No,
and it's a short film.
Yeah, it was very short.
Or a short feature.
A shorter, feature.
It's a feature still. Mm-hmm. It's a shorter feature. So that's actually a really good one to start with, too, just because it's like, this is the, you know, the least time invested to kind of introduce yourself
to him. Yeah, it's
hour
17.
I wouldn't say it's necessarily as relatable to show who he is as, like, Incendies or...
But that's fair, because it's a bit of an earlier film.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whereas now I think he's starting to really find... if not a style, a voice, there are things that he likes to do now. Because really, we're talking about it as if he's like the super established person. We're not trying to look back on this in hindsight. He's making movies right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like we're breaking down Kubrick's films.
Yeah.
You know, and looking
he's got
at...
Blade Runner.
Yeah. Out. Which, super exciting. Can't wait to see what he does there. Because honestly, I'm not a big fan of the original Blade Runner.
No, there was
no.
I was honestly bored.
Yeah. Very bored. Denis does one thing right. It's he does not bore.
No.
I don't think any of his films are boring.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely, I would say if you're listening to this still, Thank you so much for listening. And if you have any other art tours that you would like us to check out, you know, feel free to comment below on one of our YouTube videos. If you're listening to this on iTunes, please make sure to give us a review. It does help with our rankings online, and it allows us to kind of like organically promote the podcast. So if you've been listening once and you liked it, if you've been listening the entire time you like it, go on iTunes, write us a nice little blurb. We'll read your username and give you a nice shout out and thank you. And if you do it, maybe we'll review a movie of your request. But, you know,
maybe we'll give you some money.
Oh, wait, is that a bribe?
Yeah, that was a little bit of a bribe. That was a little bit of a bribe that doesn't cost any money. But, yeah, so I like this.
We need
this
some
was really good
ideas. You know, mm-hmm. So,
for sure. Yeah. Well, again, yeah, guys, thank you so much for listening. I've been Cooper Carr.
Kyle Montgomery.
Neil Anderson.
All right, guys. Check us out next time. Bye.
See you.
Love you.